Hi, friends. I'm Rob Tigan.
And I'm Joanna. And this is the Growing Home Together podcast.
We're caring for the soul of your family, helping you grow closer to God
and each other. Thank you for joining us today for the Growing Home Together podcast. Now, I remember about 15 or 20 years ago, I was asking my daughter to get dressed so that we could get ready to go for the day. And when it came time to put on her pants, she didn't want to do it. And in just a matter of minutes, my little girl was laying on the floor next to those pants, screaming and crying and refusing to put them on. And in just a few more minutes, I was doing my own share of yelling and crying. And I had decided that my daughter was stubborn and strong-willed and determined to make my day as difficult as possible. So if you fast forward to the end of that two-hour tantrum, my daughter was wearing those pants, but even though I had won the battle of wills, I had lost my daughter's trust and I had hurt our relationship in the process.
Yeah, and maybe that scenario sounds a little too familiar at your house. Maybe you have a son or daughter who fights you on every little thing. Maybe you become the parent who you never wanted to be, feeling angry and out of control. Your kid pushes your buttons every day and even though you love them, with all of your heart, you're not sure you like them anymore. You're exhausted from the power struggle, and you wish you could figure out how to connect with your kids in a positive way.
Yes, and that's why we're so excited to welcome Kirk Martin to the show today. Kirk is a popular speaker, a parenting mentor, and the founder of Celebrate Calm and the Calm Parenting Podcast. He offers a wealth of resources and coaching to help parents and teachers transform their relationship with the kids in their life. Thank you, Kirk, for joining us today.
Joanna and Rob, thank you. I'm excited to be here. And I love hearing about that tantrum. That's awesome that you still remember it.
Oh, it was vivid, let me tell you.
I remember That's awesome. It too. But thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, I remember a couple years ago, Joanna came home from a conference for adoptive moms, and she told me that your speaking session was the highlight of the event for her. And I know she was not the only one. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a coach for parents and teachers who want to change the way they relate to their kids?
Yeah, you know, I was a regular dad, and we have a son named Casey. And when he was little, everything was difficult. And I was raised by a career military father, right? So it was fear and intimidation, my way or highway approach. And I tried that with our son, and with the more strong-willed kids, it just backfired. Mm-hmm. And I'd spent all of my time until he's about 8.5, 9 years old, just trying to change him, right? Like every day I pray, like, why did you give us this difficult child? Why can't he just listen? Right. And then I started hearing this kind of still small voice asking some questions like, what if I made your son like that on purpose? And what if by trying to change him, you're frustrating my purposes for your son? And then the final question I kept hearing was, what if instead of trying to change your son, you're the one who needs to change? And I, of course, I'm a guy. So I live in denial. So I don't have any issues. I don't have anger issues. And so I just discovered when I began to control myself that I could see clearly to actually discipline Casey, which means to teach, and to connect with him. And that it was more about the relationship than it went. And as you said earlier, building trust, than it was about some kind of technique, so to speak. And so it was really just a very personal transformation within our family that kind of led us down this path.
That's good.
Yeah. So when I was telling the story about my daughter getting dressed as a little girl, that was just one of many stressful battles between us. And I never expected to have a child who challenged me on so many things. And I never thought I'd be the kind of mom who could lose my temper like that or be triggered so easily. And so why do you think the best intentioned parents end up in these battles with their kids every day?
I think the short answer is we all have anxiety over about our child's future. Right. So you're looking at this little girl and you're thinking, right, you're seeing like there's tantrums, there's meltdowns and power struggles over literally everything. And so you start projecting into the future and thinking like, who's going to hire this child? Who would possibly marry this child? And then there's all the self-doubt of like, am I doing something wrong? I never did this to my parents. And if you are a more compliant, rule-following parent by nature, and you have a strong-willed child, then you're completely flummoxed. Because in your mind, it's like, hey, someone told me to do it. My job is just to do it. And with a strong-willed child, they're going to say every time, they're going to ask you why. And they're going to do the opposite of what you want them to do. And then we tend to double down, right? So then it's like, hey, if you're not going to listen to me, I'm going to take away everything you own. And we start to get this tone in our voice, and it becomes, we kind of go again, like at our kids. And so it's partly that anxiety. And I think also this will irritate parents, but I think it's because we have a lot of control issues, right? And we want things done a certain way because that's the way I've always done it. And the really hard part with the strong-willed kids is figuring out, I don't think that most of the time kids are just being willfully defiant or rebellious. Those are very loaded words. I do think their outward behavior is often defiant. They're not going to listen to you the first time. But in their hearts, I don't think they wake up every day and say, hey, I just think I want my parents to be really upset at me and to lose everything I own, right? It's something else going on. And so it goes against everything we know as parents. And especially with Christian parents, you're like, well, we have a good home. We're not letting them watch awful things. And we pray over our children. And yet they're still often very, very challenging. And so it just takes a different understanding of the child. And for me, some different ways to connect with them in order to get that compliance, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. And, you know, I've listened to your podcast and some of your teaching tools, and I love how you challenge parents to look past the behavior to what the kids are thinking and feeling. So can you kind of help unpack that? I know you've shared a little bit, but what are some common misconceptions we make about our kids that's coming through?
So good question. I think, let me use an example of many of our kids struggle with anxiety, right? So new experiences are really difficult. So a common situation, you ask your daughter, you ask your son, hey, do you want to go to this new Taekwondo or soccer class in the fall? And they're like, sure, sign me up. And a couple weeks go by and we come and we're like, hey, we got to go. We got to go. We got your class has started. We've got to get going. And immediately they go to, oh, you know, I'm not feeling well. Can we just stay home tonight? And his parents were like, no, come on. I paid a lot of money for that class. You need to get going. And you can hear your tone start to get frustrated, right? Mm-hmm. And you get this kind of tone of like, just get in the car because we're going to be late. And you can feel at that moment, you know, inside, you're like, this is not going to end well. And then you get more resistance. And as you keep lecturing and talking and trying to convince your child to go, they dig in more until eventually they're saying, no, I'm not going. And some kids, if pushed far enough, will be like, I'm not going and you can't make me. Or they'll say, Taekwondo's stupid and so are you, right? And then, especially as a Christian parent, you're like, I can't allow that in my home because now they're challenging my authority. They're calling me names. And when you're looking at your child in that moment, this is an important distinction. Their outward behavior is disrespectful and is defiant. And so we don't look past the behavior, but what we try to get to is, what is the root of that? And if parents can walk away with one thing with their child today, it would be this. I don't think strong-willed kids are just naturally defiant, but I do think they're very frustrated kids. And because they wake up in the morning, they've got an idea of how they want things done. They're kind of natural born leaders. They tend to be a little bit impulsive. They do have a strong will, which is a really good thing to have in life, mm-hmm. right? And so when I'm looking at that child, if I see that child as just being defiant, I only really have one reaction, which is you better get your little butt in the car or you're going to lose everything you own. Or fine, you don't have to go, but to your room. And then if I'm a dad, I give consequences I can't keep, right? Like no video games, no food for the rest of the month, right? Because I was a dad, I used to bark out consequences that were, you know, you could never keep. But if I can control myself in that moment and step back and think, because sorry for the long-winded part of this, but the transition for me, I went from, well, my job is just to be chief disciplinarian in the home, because I thought a disciplinarian was just, I walk around and punish everyone. When the word discipline means to teach, I mean, it's the root word of disciple.
Right.
And so it's to teach by example. So in that situation, when I can step back for a couple seconds and say, I asked this kid to go to a new class, and now he's screaming at me, calling me names, and purposefully knows that he's going to lose everything he loves to do, all of his privileges, something else is going on here. And so I transitioned to being a giver of wisdom, a giver of tools. So in that moment, what my child doesn't need is, you know what, you can't talk to me like that to your room. Because he already knows that he can't talk to you like that. He's actually purposefully being disrespectful because he wants to get sent to his room so he doesn't have to go to the new class. Because the real issue is an anxiety issue. And when I can step back and control myself and ask God for clarity, I can look down at this little kid whose face is all red and who's spouting some awful stuff at you and say, I think I know what's going on. You're just a little bit nervous because we're going to a new place. You should be a little bit nervous. It's a little bit scary going there. But I believe you can do it. And I believe you're going to have a good time because you're really good at this, right? And that whole moment did not hinge on the child's behavior. It hinged on my response as the adult in the situation, whether I was going to be reactive or whether I was going to be the leader in the situation. And it's hard. And I want parents to know, look, you're justified at yelling at your kids, and you're justified at getting upset and frustrated and angry, but it doesn't mean that it's right, and it doesn't mean that it works. And so these are those moments where that child begins to learn, I don't really know what was going on with me, but I do know that I was really upset and I didn't want to go. And all I heard was, you're a defiant kid and go to your room and go away from me. Whereas if we can really slow our lives down and control ourselves, now I become that trusted advocate, that trusted parent who, when my child is struggling, knows, oh, my mom, my dad, they've got some wisdom. They knew that I just wasn't being a difficult child on purpose. I was actually a scared child, and they gave me some tools to deal with my anxiety. See, now that changes the whole relationship, but it didn't hinge on what the child did. It hinged on what we do. And that gives us a lot of power, right? Because you can't always control what other people do, but I control my response. So I apologize for the long-winded example there, but.
Oh, no, that's great. And actually, it was funny that you brought up Taekwondo, because I remember our son completely and epically shutting down in the middle of a karate test. And he wasn't by nature a very, you know, challenging or stubborn kind of kid, but he was just overwhelmed by anxiety like you're talking about, and we could not get his feet out on the floor. So it's exactly like you're saying.
Yeah, and it's what you're saying is really good stuff. And I'm almost wondering, and I want to ask you this, but sometimes do we need to reframe this idea of strong-willed child? Because like you said, they are strong-willed, and that can be a good thing. But I almost think we've used that term so much that as parents, we use that as an excuse. Like, you know, we hear it in conversation. Oh, my kid's so strong-willed. I have such a strong-willed child. When a lot of times I think I've found that we're strong-willed parents, and that's where the clash begins, is it's two strong wills coming together trying to get what they want. So do we need to reframe that to, like you said, see the positive side of it and how we can pull those strong characteristics out of our child?
Oh, absolutely. Rob, I think that's a fantastic way to look at it, right? Of it, to me, these kids help grow us up, right? Like, we think our job is to help our kids grow up. But the truth is, both marriage, your spouse, because your spouse is an irritating person, right? I mean, that, we're all irritating. And so it's the union of two irritating people with their own agenda, coming together under one roof and learning how to handle all that. And then you have children. The strong-willed children, the great thing about them is, for me, because, you know, Casey's our strong-willed one, is that I always know where he stands on things. Mm. And when in the real world, he is very much a take charge kid. And so it will irritate you when they're little, but when they're older, it's the exact trait that you want. I mean, they have these great, I guarantee you, everybody listening who has a strong-willed child who can have kind of a defiant back-talking mouth also has a really big heart. These are kids who have an extraordinary amount of compassion, just not usually towards siblings or parents. But yes, I think you're right of recouching some things from like, well, he's just so stubborn, right? And really coming to grips with the fact that most of these power struggles are because I'm controlling and because I'm stubborn as well, because I want things to be done a certain way. Because look, we're parents and we know, look, if you would just do it the way I asked you to, you would be done in like 7 minutes. But you'd rather argue for like 7 hours or days or weeks and lose everything you own. And so I get the frustration, but we talk a lot, and we won't have time to go into this so much today on everything. But the idea of ownership, of giving kids some ownership of their choices within your boundaries and saying, I don't really care how you get this done, as long as you get it done within my time frame or within my boundaries. And letting go a little bit, because you have kids who do things in odd ways. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what you find is, here's a good phrase we use. When we step back as parents, it gives our kids space to step up and be responsible for themselves. It's just that we don't like the way they do things, mm-hmm. right? If that makes sense. But yep. Sometimes when I give a little bit of space and say, you know, I'm going to use a phrase here, which I hope parents will use this week. I wish I was more like you, because we spend their entire childhood trying to change them and who they are. And once in a while in the morning, it would be nice when they got up to say, you know, I was thinking, I wish I was a little bit more like you, because you do push the boundaries a little bit and you do take some risks that I wouldn't. And you do look at the world in a different way. And I wish I wasn't so rigid, and I'd like to learn. Like, that will open up a child. It's not making excuses for bad behavior, but it's recognizing that God made them this way. And I would encourage people, too, to read through Scripture in a fresh way, because Christians get the idea that being a Christian is all about your outward behavior. And if you look at almost everybody who is a leader in the Bible, they had horrible outward behavior, from Moses, who was a murderer, to Jacob, a father of our faith, who deceived his brother and his father, right? Like, you can go down the list. The story of the prodigal son is not really about the prodigal son who went and did all the bad stuff, because at the end of the story, he had a humble heart. It was the older brother who said, Father, I have always done everything that you asked. He had always been obedient, but his heart was not right.
Hi friends, Rob and Joanna Tigan of Growing Home Together are the parents of 5 kids ranging in age from elementary school to high school to adult newlyweds. They know the fun and joy and also the stress and confusion that could come with raising kids through all the ages and stages of growing up. Just like you, they worry over their children's safety and well-being. They feel the pressure to train their kids to do what's right, and they carry sadness when their kids struggle or make poor choices. And as parents like you, their greatest hope is to bring up children who know God's love in their life. But Rob and Joanna know they can't control what happens to their kids or the people they become. They have learned how important it is to place their sons and daughters in God's hands. And most of all, they have learned the power of prayer to make a difference in their children's lives. That is why they are so passionate to help moms and dads like you to pray for your kids. They created two amazing resources, Powerful Prayers for Your Son and Powerful Prayers for Your Daughter. These beautiful books offer page after page of targeted prayers that cover every kind of challenge and hope your kids will face as they grow. Is your child facing hard circumstances? Are they lonely or anxious? Do they struggle to know God or trust Him? Is it hard to build a close relationship together? Take hold of Powerful Prayers for Your Son and Powerful Prayers for Your Daughter to invite God's love and power into your child's life today. Each title is available for you at growinghometogether.com or wherever books are sold. And now, back to the show.
Well, I appreciate you bringing up what the scriptures say. Before we were talking, Rob and I were thinking about the verse in Ephesians 6, verse 4 that says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." And hey, I know personally that moms can exasperate their children too. So can you kind of help us with that idea? Like, how does that word from God relate to what you're telling us today?
We tend to take things personally. And when we take it personally, we get personal with our children and we say things that are hurtful out of our own frustration. And I think reacting to our kids. And so what I really try to think, okay, when I'm having a bad day or I'm being me, you know, how does God respond to me? Mm-hmm. Right? Is he up there like shaking his head? Like, you know what? I pretty much said all this stuff to you. You read it a million times in my scriptures. You know, I gave my son for you. I can't believe that you're still doing this. And so it's a helpful construct for me to think, as a father, I want to treat my son, my daughter, the way that my heavenly father treats me, which is with a lot of mercy and patience. And so I would just encourage us for the next week, focus on yourself. Focus on your own reactions and your tone of voice. Because look, if I start speaking to someone or a child in this tone of voice, nothing's going to be heard, mm-hmm. because that's just going to put the child on the defensive. I can do tough discipline. And again, for me, discipline means to teach, to model, to disciple. And you disciple, Jesus discipled his disciples by living amongst them. And he didn't speak that many words, right? Like if you read through the number of red words in the New Testament, parents sometimes speak more in a day to their kids, lecture more in a day than Jesus did in his entire ministry as it's recorded. And Jesus lived amongst them and they watched him. They watched him how he dealt with different people. And so your kids are watching you. And so it takes off some of that pressure of like, well, I've got to teach them everything right. And it's more, I need to live out in front of them even in my flaws. But I would encourage us for the next week, just watch your own responses. And by changing your tone of voice and change even your body posture, this is a funny thing. It'll sound kind of funny. But next time things get heated or the siblings are fighting with each other, literally walk into the living room and sit down on the floor and just watch how you change the entire dynamic, not by changing the kids, but by changing your own response. And it begins, for me, it became very addictive in the sense that when I spend all my time trying to change other people, it leaves them frustrated and me frustrated. But when I focus on just controlling myself, right, that's the log. It's the log in your own eye versus trying to take the speck out of everybody else's. When I focus on that, everyone around me kind of magically changes, not because they're different, but because I'm different. It's a very, very powerful principle that we use in marriage, in all relationships. Mm-hmm. So that it's an interesting experiment for a week. And I'll give you one more. do the opposite of what you normally do. So if what you're doing right now is escalating things and causing more power struggles, for the next week, do the opposite of what you've been doing and see if you get the opposite result from the strong-willed child. And I think what you'll find is you have a lot more power by controlling your anxiety, your own control issues, and even at times saying, hey, I need to apologize to you. I just got on you about something, but that wasn't you. That was my own anxiety because I'm behind on some work and I was in a rush and I kind of dumped that on you. And so I apologized for that because that situation was about me. I started doing that with Casey when he was about 10, and it really provided clarity. It was kind of holding myself accountable that, no, that was my issue. That tone of voice that I just responded with, that's my issue. That I didn't control myself. And so I apologize for that. And that is amazing modeling because kids really value that authenticity of like, wait, my dad actually apologized because of his tone of voice? Because my dad never apologized to me. But it's not groveling. It's not saying, oh, I'm such a bad parent. Not at all. There's strength in that. Just as there's strength in going to God and say, God, listen, in that area of my life, I just keep falling down and it's my own immaturity. And so I apologize for that. Will you help me change? It's just an honesty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And you know, one of the best resources for me about being exasperating is actually our son, because he'll tell me. And there's actually two things I was doing over the last year that he brought to my attention that were really making things escalate with us. And the first thing I was doing was counting. You know how when your kid's really slow and you're like, okay, let's see if you can finish getting up there to brush your teeth by the time I count to 10, that kind of thing. And it would make him nuts. And as soon as I would be counting even what I thought was a playful way, he would just start shutting down on me because it would really stir up a lot of stress for him. And so he pretty much said, I really need you to quit the counting, Mom. And as soon as I did, he actually got a lot more cooperative. And the other thing I was doing that I didn't even notice was when I got in boss mom mode, I would start calling him child instead of calling him by his name. And there was something about me saying, oh, child, I wish you'd do this, or oh, child, I wish you'd do that, that would make him feel small, I think. And again, it would get his back up. He would start resisting me. And he communicated to me, I just don't really like it at all, Mom, when you call me that. And so I've tried to eliminate that from my vocabulary, and that's been really good for us. So yeah, chances are if you ask your kid, what do I do that's annoying? They're more than happy to tell you.
I love it. I love that your son was assertive enough and was able to say that. And then you were humble enough to say, I can see that by that would be irritating. And that to me is strength. And that's building connection and trust. And there's no weakness in that at all.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I know, you know, one way that I can exasperate my kids is homework. I know that with us getting back in the swing of school and that kind of thing and dealing with the daily challenges of homework with our kids, that can be a real pain point for a lot of families who don't think their kids are motivated to or don't care. So what can you talk a little bit about motivating our kids to do their homework and in a positive way?
Yes, I will try. Homework is really tough. I'd encourage you to think about, you know, your child, if your child naturally struggles a little bit in school in the sense that it's overwhelming, that many of our kids with anxiety, when they get home from school, many of your kids are just tapped out. So I like having a transition at times in that late afternoon or evening when you get your kids of start with a success. You know, with younger kids, we love the idea of a treasure hunt, hide something in the backyard, something they have to find. Kids love that kind of treasure hunt thing, get them moving a little bit, but create a success and some connection before going right into, okay, you just got out of school. You were thinking all day and following people's directions. Now come in, grab your backpack, and then I'm going to stand over you at the kitchen table and micromanage you for the next 3 hours until we're all crying. because that's kind of typical, right? Like,
yeah.
And you end up with that, you know, if you would just focus, you would be done in 45 minutes instead of it taking 3 hours. Like we used to do that, Casey, all the time. You know, some kids do have some, their brains are wired in a different way. And so I'm going to throw out some ideas and I encourage you to do two things. One is observe your child, observe them and learn how they learn best. If you notice that your child is always has like a leg bouncing up and down, you know, then that child probably needs some movement during homework time because that helps that child think a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And if you have a child who, some of you have kids with sensory issues, if they're always hiding under things or pressing up against things, well, that shows you their body likes physical pressure. So you can use that. You can do homework while they're sitting underneath the kitchen table, right on the floor. I know it's a little bit odd, but again, think about the ownership is homework's getting done. How it gets done, I don't really care. I want to give you some ownership of that, right? But it's going to get done. So I encourage you, here's some, maybe some odd things. Allowing kids to listen to music. Sometimes classical music is awesome, but sometimes they need to listen to intense music because music has rhythm. And the rhythm in your brain helps these kids. It actually helps many kids concentrate better. Where someone like my wife needs complete silence when doing her work. Sometimes standing at the kitchen counter where they can move back and forth, eating a snack while they're doing homework, because the act of chewing, when you're chewing, it's actually relaxing. There's sensory pressure. It brings blood flow to your brain, which many of your kids need the blood flow to the brain. And there's also a rhythm to chewing. So they can stand at the kitchen counter while they're eating a snack. I would review vocabulary words and math facts while they're jumping on a trampoline, while you're playing catch, while you're going for a walk outside. Mix it up in the house. Do homework in different places. If you have the flexibility, we used to do homework a lot of times in public places, which sounds opposite of what you would want to do. Well, that's going to be distracting. But with some kids, it actually helps them concentrate better. So I would, if you have kids with ADHD or a brain that kind of works like that, remember this phrase that it's not about managing their time. It's about managing their energy because these kids tend to work a little bit on momentum and they have a hard time getting over the hump. And so sometimes you have to jumpstart that brain with physical exercise, because that gets the blood flowing and it relaxes them a little bit. And then the last thing I mentioned would be create a success, because as parents, we're always like, well, you have to do the hardest thing first, because if you do the hardest thing first, then it gets better. But sometimes it's opposite. And I start homework time with a success where I'm able to say, hey, really good job with that. Really good job. Because that's a better way to start than, you know what, I don't have time for this. And if you're not going to focus, you know, most of the time it's not, the kids just need some tools to do homework in different ways. And I lied. I'll mention one other thing. Realize that doing their homework well for balance is not a predictor of life success. Some of your kids may fight you over homework until they graduate. They just may. And I want you to know from the long point of view, I want a curious child who loves to learn. Mm-hmm. A curious child who loves to learn, who asks questions. It's just that some of you with strong-willed children, the truth is they're just not that interested in what you're interested in or what teachers are. But they're fascinated by all these other really amazing things that they don't get grades for. And so there's a really hard balance, because you don't want to crush their spirit and say, I don't want you to be curious about those things. Just focus on all the things that you don't care about and do it well, right? And so there's a balance there that you and your spouse are going to have to wrestle over this. And I'd say some nights or some days you have to send a note to the teacher and say, you know, we didn't get our homework done last night, but here's what we did do. Our son built a robot from scratch. We played outside and we learned counting by counting fireflies while we were chasing them, right? So don't be afraid to sometimes push back on artificial standards, because at the end of the day, you as the parent are responsible for your child's education. But I'd encourage you to define exactly what you want. Do you just want good grades, or do you want your child to be curious and love to learn and be fascinated by things and learn how to write well? I like to make it very specific, because that keeps us a little bit more on track as parents.
Yeah, that's so good, because I think you're just reminding me, we need to be students of our kids. You know, we need to be willing to step in and think harder. And I think in our fast-paced culture, we get so used to just moving through stuff and getting it done that and like you said, we're more concerned about the pressure we're feeling internally of what's the teacher going to say, and, you know, is my kid going to do this, and is this going to cause this, rather than just being a student of the way they learn the best and grab a hold of the joy of learning and connection, which is far more important long term than what, you know, the grade on that specific test or whatever. So I appreciate those ideas.
Right.
That's good perspective.
Yeah. And I appreciate too, you kind of mentioned it. We are a family who's had to walk beside our kids who some have ADHD, some have had anxiety issues, some very real sensory issues, a learning disability that made homework pretty challenging. And I know for me, I struggle when, I don't always know what are appropriate expectations to even have of my kids. Like this is ongoing. Our child with sensory issues, it really slows down his pace of eating his meals. And so the whole family can sit down and enjoy a meal together and get up again in probably 20 minutes, but he might need 45 minutes to an hour. And that still is really hard for me to adapt to that expectation of give the kid an hour, you know,
I want the
20 minutes. And so for a family like ours, what would you tell parents who kind of don't know what are appropriate expectations to set for what their kids really can do?
I think it's what Rob said of be a student of your child. You're likely going to have, if you have two children, one is probably going to go zoom through their homework and be perfectly fine. Do all of it, it's done. And then the other one's going to complain and probably cry half the time. And just, it's going to take longer. And that's knowing part of that is that's who that child is, and their brain works in a different way. So I try to give tools. So the jump-starting brain of the music and movement, those things can help that child process more quickly. But at the end of the day, they may never process as quickly as another child. And you have to, I think you have to keep the long view, right? Curious child who loves to learn. Does he do his homework well? Not really. Do we do it for him half the time? Pretty much, right? And we did for Casey. Just being honest, there were times where we're like, it's just not worth the fight. So these things are arbitrary. These aren't important. But what is important is, for me, it was reading. I want a child who enjoys reading. So that means sometimes you have to go to the teacher and say, look, my child's just not interested in these stories, but he is super interested in this subject. Would it be okay if he did a book report on this subject instead of the one that you want him to do? And there you have to, you know, there's your relationship skills with the teacher of thank you for loving my child and giving assignments, but could we tweak them a little bit? And that's and you're always going to struggle with, well, are we just babying him? Are we coddling him? And you're just going to have to wrestle with that. I was a little bit ruthless with that because I don't think it's human nature. I'll put it this way. We have certain things we're curious about, and we didn't choose that. God put those things in us, and they're meant for us to explore. And most of school is very arbitrary in what we ask kids to do. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage you to let go, especially mom, let go of your agenda, right? Purposefully slow life down, right? So build in, because we live on the edge in our society. Well, we can get this done and this done, and we'll do this extracurricular, and then we'll go here. And we leave such a razor thin margin of error when anything goes wrong. Now I'm starting to get this tone because we're supposed to be there and you couldn't do that. Whereas if you really artificially slowed life down and said, we're only going to get a couple things done tonight. Here's what they are. And you left lots of space. It makes it less pressure for you and your kids. And you'll find you probably will get more done by relaxing a little bit than always kind of pushing. And I kind of joke sometimes of, look, you have your entire adult life to be miserable in your work. Don't start it when your kids are 8, right? Like most adults are like, I don't like my job. It's unfulfilling. And it's like, we say to our kids, like, you're not going to like anything you do when you're older. So let's get used to it in school. And then we just, you know, learning isn't fun anymore. And we're making little me's rather than saying, I can just tell you, you know, Casey's 28. So we're on the back end of this. I have never once said, you know, I wish I would have pressed homework a little bit more. I wish we would have done those projects that didn't relate to anything in life much better. Like, you're not going to look back. You're going to look back at the memories that you made, the teaching moments that were outside of school. I just take that longer term view. It will help you alleviate some of the short term arbitrary pressure, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't either. We haven't looked back, and our kids are all ages and stages too. And I agree with you. We've not, and the kids that generally didn't, whose brains didn't like math, still don't like math. And the ones that love science type things
still love science,
you know? So yeah, trying to force our kids into some of these things, creates extra pressure on them and ourselves, that leads to some of this stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing that I love that you consistently say, and wherever I've heard you speak, is that as parents, we need to deal with ourselves before we even start to worry about dealing with our kids. And in some of these situations we've talked about, like getting my daughter to put her pants on, or getting our son to just finish that pork chop already, or get through the homework or whatever, those can be very triggering depending on where we're coming from as mom and dad. And so if there's a parent whose just emotions are riding so high and they can tell everything is going to go south in about half a second, what can we do in the moment to regain our self-control?
Good. I think, so there's being a student of yourself, right? Of knowing, okay, here are my triggers. You know what I like to do? I like to diagram it. Here are my triggers. So one of my triggers is, because my dad, career military, was being late. So I started to diagram this and I was like, okay, every morning, Casey dawdles and he's slow at getting ready and he waits to do everything till the last minute. So what I noticed is when that happened, my tone of voice started to get like this and I started to pressure it. Casey, come on, got it. We've got to go. And then what happens when my tone gets like that? He slows down even more and begins to resist. I get more upset. And so at the end of that time, we're just yelling at each other and everybody's in tears. So then I began to do that thing of the opposite. So next time my son dawdles, instead of going in, standing with my hands on my hips in his doorway, barking at him to get moving, instead, what I learned to do is I did the opposite. I'd go in, I sat on the side of the bed, and for 30 seconds, I would connect with him. Hey, have you learned it? Because he was learning guitar. Hey, did you learn any new songs on your guitar? Hey, tell me about that. And I'd listen for 30 seconds. And I'd say, look, here's the deal. We need to leave in 17 minutes. Here's what needs to be done. I'm going to go do X. Let me know if you need help. And when I led him like that, and then I gave him some space, I learned that he followed me more. So I take a common situation and I just sit in it for a second and say, why is this bothering me? Right. And you'll discover that you probably have issues from childhood, right? Of your parents and the way you were raised. And you'll start to have a lot of self-discovery of, oh, well, this is a common one for moms, Joanna. Well, if my child's not doing X, that means I'm not being a good mom, right? Like that's a huge trigger for moms. Mm-hmm. Well, if my child isn't behaving well, then I'm not a good mother. Well, if you start thinking I'm not a good mother, if my son doesn't finish his pork chop or get his homework done on time, well, you're just going to press that child, get to, but you know, there are kids starving in the world. And you know, I made a special meal for you and you just need to, you know, you need to eat. And if you're not going to finish your pork chop, then you are not going to get to do X later. And then it just spirals. And so when you can step back and sometimes just do less and give a little bit of space, I've learned sometimes when I walk away, my child will actually do what I want them to do. They don't want you watching. Does that make, I don't know if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
But there's
does.
There's this weird dynamic of sometimes I will tell a child, hey, here's the deal. Here's what needs to be done. I'm not going to watch because I've got my own stuff to do. And when I step back and remove myself, they often will step up and do it. But if I stand over them, then it's just resistance and shut down. So try that this week of just removing yourself and giving space. And then I'd add one other thing. I know we have a lot of things to work on, but the affirm what your child is doing well, instead of always pointing out what they're not doing. Because your kids, when they're teenagers, I guarantee they will come back and say, why did you never notice all the things that I did right? And all you ever did was correct me and point out what I did wrong. So this week, I would ruthlessly look at your child and say, you know, it's really awesome. This morning, you got up and you did X, Y, and Z. And I didn't even ask you to tell. I didn't even have to ask you to do it. I appreciate that. And then walk away. Don't make a big deal of it. Short, sweet, little affirmations of, hey, that was a good choice. I like how you did that.
Yeah.
Then walk away. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And I think that's why we early on called you a coach, because I think that's the reality. You know, I think what we need to remember is they say insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And you're giving us some different tools and things. And some of those tools are going to work real well with one child and some with not. But one thing that you do give us and through all your materials is ideas to become students of our kids and keep trying different things. So I know for me as a father of five kids, and you said Casey's 28, our oldest is 27, and okay. Bringing us our first grandchild here this year too.
Yay.
Yeah. But you know, one of the things that's really important to me as I develop a relationship with my kids is to still have a close relationship with them when they're grown and out of the house. But I know sometimes that those power struggles and those things we deal with when they're younger can create trust issues. So what would you tell the parent who thinks that it's too late to build a close and trusting relationship with their child?
It's never too late. And I just encourage you, walk through the steps of, if you need to, apologize. Hey, you know what? When you were younger, does it always seem like I'm on you all the time? Like I'm always lecturing. I'm never really happy with what you're doing. And they may come back. Now they may come back with a, yeah, honor that anyway, right? You own up, you lead with like, you know what? I apologize for that because I see so many great things in you. And I always wanted the best for you. So honesty, apology. Here's one that we talk about is releasing them. There's this very powerful concept of, whether you speak it over your child to them, it can be awkward, or write it to them, or just do it in private. It is, I release you. I release you to be the person God made you to be, not who I wanted you to be. I release you, son, to be who you're supposed to be, not to be just like your sister or just like the other kids in youth group. I release you to be who you are and not to be a mini version of me. There's something very powerful in there is a deep acceptance that their differences are okay. It's not an excuse for defiance for them calling you names, but on a deep level, beginning to accept them and the fact that they're just made differently. Or some of the problem is they're made just like you, mm-hmm. right? And then that's where, oh, I don't want them to struggle with the same things I did in life. So I'm going to really try to change them. So that deep level of acceptance, kids can feel that a mile away. And we usually end all of our live workshops. I always end with one piece of encouragement, which is enjoy your strong-willed child. Learn to enjoy that strong will, that quick wit, that the inappropriate jokes at times, because they have really good insight into people. And they will come up with that. Look, the reason they can push your buttons, the reason they're so witty is because they're observers of human nature. And they know it's chess, checkers, pushing buttons is all in the same brain process. And the negative side is pushing your buttons. The positive side is they can feel when people are hurting. And so the Jesus part of them, when they get older, they will be fantastic at helping hurting people. It is part of their training ground is with us, but it's the same, the very same skill that leads them to push buttons of their sibling on one side is the very same skill that allows them to understand and feel the hurts and pains of other people.
Yeah, that's good. And I know looking back, you know, too, with our kids that the stronger willed kids of our five, you know, as much as they brought those hair pulling moments, they also brought so much laughter and energy to our home that, I know our home would be different in a bad way if we didn't have that, you know? So I love that. And this has just been so helpful, Kirk. And I know our listeners are going to want to get a hold of you and just all the wealth of great resources you have. Can you tell us where we can connect with you online to find those things?
Yeah. I mean, you can celebratecalm.com is a website. If you Google or look up the Calm Parenting Podcast, we've got, I think, 150 podcasts on, you know, try to keep them short on different topics. And if you want to email me personally, it's Kirk, K-I-R-K, at celebratecalm.com. I'll be happy to answer questions, try to point you in the right direction. Just tell us you heard of us through this podcast, because then it makes it a little bit more personal for us. But yeah, we're happy to help. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I'm guessing that there are some parents listening who are feeling pretty discouraged and pretty tired right now, but they really want to take hold of the fresh perspective that you're offering us and really create some real change in their families. Would you be willing to pray for those parents right now, Kirk?
Absolutely. God, we thank you that you identified yourself as a father and you had a son, that at the core of who you are is familiar. You're a family, and it's connection. And it was Jesus's connection with you that allowed him to do what he did. And I just pray that all of us, we would learn what you're like as a father, so that we know you're a good father. And so that we take what we learn from you and we parent our kids like that. And I pray for the connection, just the connection between fathers and son and mothers and daughters and everyone. Just pray that you give us patience and grace. Help us give ourselves grace as parents to know this is really, really hard. And just pray that you bring some refreshing into these families' lives and just enjoy, so that they can enjoy their children again and know that ultimately you're the great shepherd, you're the great father, and you'll pull everything together. So we pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Thanks, Kirk. And thanks for taking the time to talk to us today about understanding and loving our kids better. It's been great.
Oh, awesome. I love you guys, what you're doing, and keep up the good work, and really appreciate your perspective as well.
Thanks. And thank you, friends, for joining us today for the Growing Home Together podcast. We'd love to connect with you over at our website, growinghometogether.com, where you're going to find all kinds of resources, including a free download of fun activities to help you connect with your kids. At Growing Home Together, we're caring for the soul of your family.
And growing home together with you. Bye.
Bye.